Order.
The week in the House ended as it began with a debate sparked by the resignation of Revenue Minister Peter Dunn. This time, MPs were debating the Prime Minister's move to replace Mr Dunn on his Intelligence and Security Committee with Health Minister Tony Ryle. After nominating Mr Ryle on behalf of the Prime Minister, his Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, effectively turned the chamber over to the opposition, led by Labour's Grant Robertson.
The Prime Minister is quite clearly telling New Zealanders he doesn't trust Peter Dunn to be on the Intelligence and Security Committee. And presumably he's doing that, Mr Speaker, because he believes that Peter Dunn is the person who leaked the Kitteridge report.
Whether in fact the Prime Minister knew that was earlier the subject of a series of questions from Mr Robertson.
Did his Chief of Staff have any further conversations with him after the 29th of May and before the 5th of June about progress with the Henry report?
The Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, depending on the day on which the report was received by the Prime Minister, which was the 5th of June, then the answer would be no.
But Mr Brownlee was soon back with a correction.
The answer I gave on behalf of the Prime Minister was no. What I should have said is, yes, there were several conversations about the matter, meaning the entire inquiry, sir.
Back in the debate, Grant Robertson wound up by calling for a full inquiry.
The process by which Peter Dunn lost his position on the committee has been fudged by the Prime Minister, and today we have a situation where our intelligence agencies are not trusted by New Zealanders. This appointment of Tony Ryle today will do absolutely nothing to increase that confidence. We need a full and independent inquiry into our intelligence agencies, and the National Government should agree to that today.
Greens co-leader Russell Norman, meanwhile, called for improved oversight of the spy agencies.
In other jurisdictions, the parliamentary oversight is taken a lot more seriously than it is in New Zealand. They have proper committees and they have real powers. For example, the Norwegian committee is actually not made up of MPs, purposely made up of non-MPs, so that it's independent of parliament. It has powers to require intelligence agents to appear. It has the power to make those intelligence agents hand over information. The Intelligence and Security Committee in New Zealand has no such powers.
New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters had no doubts about who leaked the report.
How is it that one Member of Parliament knows precisely how Peter Dunn leaked that Kitteridge report? How come one Member of Parliament knows exactly how he did it, and yet Mr Key claims he doesn't know, Mr Henry claims he doesn't know? In fact, no one knows, excepting one Member of Parliament, knows exactly how he did it.
The debate ended with an unusual vote, Peter Dunn joining the Government, ACT and the Māori Party to endorse the Prime Minister's nomination of Tony Ryle as his replacement on the Intelligence and Security Committee, all other parties abstaining except Mana, which lodged the sole vote in opposition. Now from the Chamber to the committee rooms in this report from Rhys Lyon.
The Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee was briefed on a proposed change to rules governing international war crimes. It's called the Kampala Amendment and would outlaw the act of aggression. A definition of that was given by Brigadier Kevin Rawdon of the Defence Forces Legal Services.
It's invading people, it's sinking their ships at sea, it's seizing their territory, it's displacing their government, it's imposing a blockade. It is that very 60s and 70s, Cold War, post-Cold War type of concept of a use of force. And the second element of it, which is very important, is it's state on state.
Brigadier Rawdon said a crime of aggression was a leadership crime.
A soldier can't be found guilty of aggression. A commander can be found guilty of aggression. A prime minister, a president, a government, a minister of defence can be found guilty of aggression. A private soldier can't be. But to get there is a threshold which says we're talking about really serious, egregious breaches of the international legal order to even get the prosecutor moving past stage one on this.
Also at the briefing was Gerard Van Bowman of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs Multicultural and Legal Group, who said the amendment to the war crimes statute had a long way to go.
And has to be adopted by 2/3 majority of states' parties before that amendment can be operational, and there must be 30 state parties that ratify the amendments before it becomes into force.
Mr Van Bowman said only 6 countries have agreed to the amendments so far.
We have put out to ministers the options for them to consider. Because of the fact that there's this time delay, the options are either to wait and just do nothing for the moment and see what our other like-minded countries are doing. The second option would be to pass the legislation, but not to ratify the amendment until you knew that what the outcome was likely to be of the vote in 2017. Well, the third one was to do the whole thing and then therefore become one of the immediate sort of countries that will be bringing the convention, the amendments into force.
Gerard Van Bowman briefing the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee on the Kampala Amendment to the International War Crimes Statute.
That report from Rhys Lyon, I'm Tom Fruin, and this program is brought to you with funding from the Office of the Clerk.